exactly a week ago, I was asked to give a question answer for a Yeshivat HaKotel. Yeshiva in the Old City. It's actually situated right next to the Kotel. Yeah. So they asked me to do a question answer, which I did on Zoom. They were in quarantine. And they obviously keep all the rules of quarantine, so they were actually everyone in their own room. And I did a Zoom for them. And it was a question answer. And one of the boys asked me a question. He said to me, if you could go back in time, say, apologize for asking this question. This is a question you probably get all the time. So you could go back in time and meet one person, who would you meet? And I said, actually, I've never been asked that question before. I mean, we did a question and answer every single Shabbos in Bloomfield, and that was never one of the questions. It's not the type of questions that... It's a different type of question, you know? It's not so practical. Anyway, so I said, it's an interesting question, and I gave him an answer. But I prefaced, I said the following preface with the answer. I actually had a similar story with someone named Rabbi Yitzchak Hellman. Rabbi Yitzchak Hellman, a big tzaddik, a big Talmud Chacham, lives in my building, 46 hours of Abira. He's a son-in-law of Menachem Pritzavitz. He's a Talmud of the Mir and Brisk. And he's a very special person. I was by him on Beishana Rabbah at night. At the time, I didn't even live in his building, but I've been close with him for many, many years. One of the perks of moving to the building is I was able to live next to him. And he posed the following question to me. Similar question. He said to me, if you had a choice between meeting Reb Chaim Brisker or the Briskerov, I'll tell you who that is in a second. Who would you choose? Who would you want to meet? Reb Chaim Brisker or the Briskerov? So who was the Briskerov? By the way, there's a lot of people that were the Rav and Brisk. So Simcha Zelek Riegler. But when most people say the Briskerov, Reb Shulam Diskin was the Briskerov, but most people mean Reb Yitzchok Zev Soloveitchik, the son of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. So you want to meet the father, and this was the father of Chaim Brisker, is the father of the Brisker dynasty, the father of the Brisker methodology of learning, the Rosh Hashiva of Valoshin, Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Would you rather meet him or Reb Yitzchok Zev, his son? Now everyone knows that Reb Yitzchok Zev considered himself a shadow of his father. Reb Chaim Brisker was, everyone knows that, that's not a secret. So the knee-jerk reaction obviously is, and that was my obvious response right away, is for sure I'd rather meet Reb Chaim, he revolutionized the Torah world. He said to me, I would rather meet the Briskerov. And I'll tell you why. He said, I feel if I would meet Reb Chaim Brisker, I would walk out of that meeting and feel like I got nothing from it. He's too high for me. He's too far away, too distant. I'd sit there, I wouldn't even know what I'm looking at. It's like, it's from a totally different world. It's extraterrestrial. I couldn't even like, there's nothing I could take out of the meeting. So you're right, I'd be meeting someone that, you know, is a tremendous, tremendous hero and icon, but there'd be no takeaway. If I meet the Briskerov, maybe I'd be able to like identify, relate a little bit, I'd get something out of it. So I told them, for sure, I would love to meet David HaMelech, you know, Yaakov Avinu. Well, there's lots of people that I would want to meet from history. Rashi, I would love to meet Rashi. But it could be I would get nothing from meeting these people. If you ask me who, there's one person I could go back and meet, it would be the Pia Setzner Rebbe. Maybe I'd be able to get something from the Heiliger Pia Setzner Rebbe. The Rebbe was Nifter around 80 years ago, so it's not that long ago. It's not that long ago. I want to tell you a little bit about the Pia Setzner, so you should understand. We're going to be learning Beis Hashem on Monday nights, the Sefer Chovas Talmidim. That's not his most famous Sefer, though if you would have asked him, that was probably his magnum opus, which means that was his greatest work. He was himself very enamored by the Sefer Tovot Chovas Talmidim. He said himself, if I wouldn't have known, I would have thought I never could have written the Sefer. It's like, it's just, the poetry in the Sefer, the language is so beautiful. It's very special. It's not his most famous work. His most famous work is called the Eish Kodesh. And there are shuls all over the world named after the Eish Kodesh. Probably the most famous one is in Beit Shemesh. There's another one in Five Towns. Rabbi Weinberger has a shul, the Eish Kodesh, which is named after the Piasetzna. There's also another Piasetzna anacle of something somehow shaykes to the Piasetzna Rebbe. In Beit Shemesh, it has a Eish Kodesh shul. Why is that Sefer's most famous Sefer? It's very simple. Because of the drama around the Sefer. The Eish Kodesh, first of all, was written during the war. That itself is already a lot of drama. He wrote the Sefer. Imagine writing a Sefer and there are bombs falling all around you. Imagine writing a Sefer and there's people, your next of kin, your closest friends, your closest family, are dying. And you have the head, to write a Sefer. And he wrote a Sefer during these years. Eish Kodesh. How did he print the Sefer? What he did was he took the manuscript and he put it into a milk bottle. We have the milk bottle. He put it in a milk bottle, a container, but you know, they used to have bigger, not plastic stuff. And he buried it in the ground and he wrote on it a letter. We have the letter. And the letter says, if anyone finds this, I'm asking you, please send it to Tel Aviv. I have relatives in Tel Aviv. Ask them to print the sefer for me. And he writes, Hashem should have rachmanas and mercy. We have the letter, I have it here. And after the war, they found the milk bottle. And it's so fantastic, it's so phenomenal that they could find such a thing, that the Eish Kodesh became the most famous Sefer. He's known as the Baal Eish Kodesh. But really, he felt that his work, his greatest work, was Chovas Talmidim, which he printed in his lifetime. And he writes as an introduction to the Sefer Chovas Talmidim, which we're about to learn, that any person, here it is, let's see it, here it is. Shani mevakesh u'mischanin lefnei kol echad miYisrael. I'm asking everyone. Sheyilmot misifre. Learn from my sfarim. Ubetach schus avoyse akdoishim. The schus of my grandfathers and great grandfathers. Rabbi Elimelech Milashensk, the Kashmir Tzamagin, and others, because he was a benon shel kadoishim. He was the son of great people. They will stand for me and uchol for him. Anyone who learns my sefer, for his entire family in this world and the next world, Hashem should have mercy on us. So that's what the Piasetzna wrote. And we're going to, Beis Hashem, learn his Sfarim. I just want to give you a little bit more introduction. You should know a little bit about who he was. Okay? As I mentioned, he was an Einukul of Rabbi Elimelech Milashensk, a great grandson. His father was named Elimelech after Rabbi Elimelech Milashensk. His father was also a Rebbe himself. And his father... the Piasetzna, the Rebbe's name is Kolonimus Kalman. When he was born, his father had a special chavivas, a special love for this child. He actually put one of the Hasidim in charge. His job was to stay awake at night, to look over the crib, to make sure that the boy's yarmulke should never fall off his head. And if the yarmulke fell off, this chassid had to put the yarmulke back on. The boy, mamish, never went a second without a yarmulke on his head. Because the Rebbe wanted that his son should be able to always have his Yerushalayim. When he was 2 years old, Kolonimus Kalman became very sick. And he was so sick that they feared for his life. His father was a Rebbe. The name of the Hasidus, many of these Hasidus were wiped out, but Grodzinsk, I think, I don't remember the exact how to pronounce it, yeah. Grodzinsk. His father took off his strimal. And he said, until my son gets better, I'm not Rebbe. I'm not seeing any Hasidim. I'm not taking any Kvitlach. Nothing. My son needs to get better. This little boy. Because he had so much hope in this child. As a skula, his father took from the taba'ot of the Arba Minim. And he wrapped it around his son's fingers. Somehow that's some sort of skula al-pi Kabbalah. And the boy got better. Baruch Hashem. Kolonimus Kalman. Well, he got better, but even before he turned 3, his saintly father passed away, and he was an orphan at 3 years old. He was brought up by others at the time. When he was 3 years old, there was no Rebbe anymore, right? His father passed away. He was, I guess, the heir to the throne. So all the Hasidim went to something called Ostrovtsa. Ostrovtsa is Rav Meir Yechiel. It's not so far away. It's also a Polish Hasidish Rebbe. Those of you who've been around for a while, maybe you've heard me quote the Ostrovtsa Rebbe before. They went to the Ostrovtsa Rebbe. And they became Ostrovtsa Hasidim. When he eventually became Rebbe, which happened when he was 20 years old, the Ostrov Tzogoyim told the Hasidim, go home. You have where to go now. Leave. You don't belong here anymore. And he sent all the Hasidim back to Golanim Iskamba. Before that happened, he needed someone to like bring him up. He's talking about a little baby, he's 3 years old. So who's going to take care of him? Who's going to be Mechanachim? So he had someone who was his father's Hasidim, Rabbi Yochmiel Moshe, who was from Kozhnitz. Remember, he's an Enoch of the Kozhnitz of Magad himself. He said, I'm going to take care of this child. And he took care of him, brought him to his house, and he treated him like his own. On his 13th birthday, his bar mitzvah, he celebrated his bar mitzvah, and he got engaged at 13 to the daughter of Yechiel Moshe. So he took him in, and he actually became his son-in-law. At 13, he got engaged. He married at 16. At 20, he became Rebbe. So, as we mentioned, the Ostrov Tzogoyim sent the Hasidim to go back, and they told him, you have where to go. Now the Rebbe, he didn't go back to Grazinsk where his father was, and he was trying to find which would be a good city where he could set up his court. Where was he going to be? And many of the neighboring little shtetls, they had all these towns, all wanted that the Piasetzna should be, Golanim Iskalman should be the Rebbe. He chose a town called Piasetzna. It was a little town. That's where he wanted to go. And he was also advised that way from his father-in-law to take this town of Piasetzna. And that's where he stayed. Now, he set up Hasidish court there. But there was a Rav in Piasetzna, as they had. They had sometimes, there was a Rosh Hashiva, there was a Dayan, there was a Rav. The Rav's name was Rav Noyach, he was the Rav in Piasetzna. After the Rav was Nifter, so the town said, we want the Rebbe to become the Rav. The Rebbe should be the Rav. And he said, no, I can't do that, because Rav Noyach has a son or a son-in-law. I want, he should, it's in the family. He deserves to be able to become Rav. And they said, Rebbe, we want you to be Rav. They came to the following agreement, negotiation, that Reb Noyach's son should become Dayan, and he'll become Rav. That's what they agreed. That was their Heskim. And that's the way it was. But he refused to take a salary as Rav. The money should go to the Almona of Rav Noyach, who was the Rav. I'm not taking any money. But he agreed to be Rav. And they adored him. And he was Rav there until the First World War. When the First World War broke out, everything just went into pandemonium. And the whole world just fell apart. The Piasetzna moved to Warsaw, and he was in Warsaw. He became known as the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto. He was there in Warsaw. He stayed there. And the Agudas Rabbanim was a tremendous amount of activity. We can't imagine, they're trying to rebuild their lives. So they needed some place which was going to be the epicenter. What was going to be like the ground zero, and that was Warsaw. So he stayed in Warsaw, and he said, I'm leaving Piasetzna. And the town of Piasetzna says, we're not taking another Rav. No, no. As long as the Piasetzna is around, he's our Rav. Rav Golanim Iskalman is our Rav. And they took no other Rav. They refused. So he used to go to Piasetzna, and he would stay there from Shabbos Nachamu, which is Tisha B'Av, until Shabbos Bereshis. He would spend in Piasetzna. The rest of the time, he'd be in Warsaw. But they wouldn't take another Rav out of their love and their admiration for him. I want to share with you a short Dvar Torah from the father of the Piasetzna. And then I'm going to share with you a song, a story. A story that I heard first when we were going to the Piasetzna. It's a story that Reb Shlomo Kalbach tells about someone that he met who was a chosid of the Piasetzna Rebbe. The Sefer Imrei Elimelech. That's Reb Elimelech Migrazhinsk, the father of Reb Kolonim Iskalman, the Piasetzna Rebbe, the grandson of Reb Elimelech Milizhinsk. He says the following thing. Hamoyser nafshoi ba'ad Yisrael, someone that's willing to do something, to sacrifice, to give up for another yid, gadol min hamoser nafsho bad Hashem bilvad, is even greater than giving, sacrificing for Hashem. Listen to what he says. V'harezeh, it's comparable to moser nafsho bavur ben hamelech. Let's say someone does something. He puts himself out. He sacrifices. He risks his life for the son of the king. Shemochiach mizbezeh kama atzuma havasai lamelech. He shows how great is his love for the king, that not only would he sacrifice or put himself in danger for the king, but even for the king's son, the shalarach b'shviloi ala gam b'shvil b'noi. If you put yourself out for the king's son, the king realizes how much more so that shows your love, your dedication and devotion. So said the Imri Ali Melech, a person who does something for another yid, it's a tremendously high madriga. So when I read this, it reminded me of the story of the holy hunchback. So if you can bear with me, I'm going to try to see if I can open up this disgusting machine over here. And what do I do? Can you help me out?
Masano?
Right. I don't know what to do. All right. I don't know how to use this. Right, it's downloaded. Can you help me?
What's it all?
It's downloaded.
Go to the 2020 playlist.
2020 playlist. What thank you.
The last song. Song.
The holy, the holy, the holy.
Here it is. It's coming, my friends.
Got it.
Very special. I we listened to this. We were on the bus on a Europe trip. We were on our way to Warsaw. Hold on, my friends. We're gonna get there.
Story about Rav Kleinman's coming. Everybody knows that Rav Kleinman's coming had a kingdom of children. This yeshiva, there were hundreds and hundreds of young people, children between the age of 5 and 17, mostly. And he was like their father, their mother, their best friend, did everything for them. In my whole life, I wanted so much to meet one of those people, maybe somebody survived. And wherever I went, I asked people, I didn't find anyone. I knew just a few were left. Okay, now listen to me, Shaman and Dana. I want you to remember this story all your life. One time, I walked down the Yarkon in Tel Aviv, and on a street corner, I see a street cleaner, a real hunchback, but really, completely misfigured. And somehow my heart told me that maybe he's a Lama of Tzadik. Maybe he's one of the 36. I don't know who he is, but I'd better talk to him. I held up my hand and I said, "Hey, Shalom Lecha." And he answered back, "Aleichem Shuv." So I realized he must be from Poland somewhere. I said, "Where are you from?" He says, "I'm a Peshinesh." He says, "What? You have a Peshinesh? You know, I'm waiting to see people from Peshinesh all my life. Have you ever seen Rav Kleinman is coming?" He says, "What? Rav Kleinman is coming?" He says, "I was in his yeshiva from the age of 5 till I was 11. And he says to me, "Believe me, when I was 11 and I came to Auschwitz, I was so strong that the Germans thought I'm already 17. And it was not a hunchback before. It's only because it beat me up so much and it never healed. So when it came out after the war, I was just, I'm a broken person." He said, "Nobody in the whole world." I turned away. I was just crying. I said to him, "I have to ask the biggest thing in the world. Please tell me all about Shabbos and Peshinesh." And I was hoping I'd be able to give it over to Neshama then and Dad. Please let me tell you something. Till Mashiach is coming. Until Mashiach is coming. There'll never be such a Shabbos. There'll never be such a Shabbos again. Can you imagine hundreds of children and young people singing Chodai Levechaz Kalo, Bnei Shabbos Mekablo. Hundreds of young people pouring out their hearts and singing Sholem Aleichem Malachi Asholem, Malachi Asholem. So many holy angels with their eyes, as do I have to tell you. But I want you to know, I can't tell you what it was, he says. But I just want you to know there'll never be such a Shabbos again. And I said to him, and he says, you know, the Rebbe Adrian says Friday night, oh, it was so good, the simcha, the joy was. Again, he says, do you think this was paradise? It was much higher. Was much, much higher. So he said to him, my dearest, sweetest friend, do you remember any of the teachings? Any Torah? Any, tell me some Torah from Klamas Kana. He says, you know something? After being in Auschwitz for so many years, you don't remember anything. But he says, you want to hear one Torah, he said, which saved my life. He says, I want you to know between the fish and the soup, between the soup and the chicken, between the chicken and the dessert, Rav Kleinman's Kama would say Torah. But after every Torah, he would say like this, Kindelach, children, Gedenche, remember, the greatest Sache in the world is Tin Yanam Ataiva. The greatest thing in the world is to do somebody else a favor. And he would say it all the time, every Friday night. Maybe every Friday, must have said it 5-6 times. He says, when I came to Auschwitz and I knew that my whole family is killed, I wanted to kill somebody else or commit suicide. I just wanted to be violent. And there were moments when I couldn't bear it anymore. But suddenly I would hear my Rebbe's voice telling me, Kinderlach, gedenk, the greatest Sache in the world is Tin Yanam Ataiva. And suddenly there was so much life in my heart, and I knew what I have to do. I would get up wherever I was sleeping. And do you know how many favors you can do in Auschwitz at night? Do you know how many people want to tell you stories about their wives and their children and nobody has strength to listen to it anymore? Because you heard it a million times. I would be up all night going from one to the other and they would tell me their stories. They'd keep me going for a few weeks. Then it was at the end again and I just realized they have to commit suicide tonight. But in the last moment, I would hear my Rebbe's voice. Then he says to me, you know, I'm here in Tel Aviv. I have nobody in the whole world. I have nobody in the whole world. Do you know how often I walk down to the ocean and I'm already with my feet in the water? But in the last moment, I hear my Rebbe's voice. And you know what I'm doing? I'm running back to the streets. He says, do you know how many favors you can do to people on the streets of Tel Aviv, even if you're a street cleaner? Okay, now listen to me, Neshama and Adar, my most beautiful children. A few months later, I came back, and I was looking for my holy hunchback. He wasn't there. I asked the people, Where's the street cleaner? It's the street cleaner. Don't you know he passed away on Sukkot? So you know what I'm waiting for? Shemru Dala? I'm waiting for Mashiach to come.
My friends, that's the story of the Holy Hunchback. I don't know if anyone can tell a story like Shlomo tells a story. But I was reminded because of what it says over here. From Nimri Elimelech, a person whose Moisa Nefesh for Yisrael is even bigger than Moisa Nefesh for Hashem. So you could do a lot of favors for people in Auschwitz, you could do a lot of favors for people on the streets of Tel Aviv, you could do a lot of favors for people when you're like, you feel all like locked up over here in a building in Beit Vegan. You do a lot of mitzvahs here. And I know that people are having a hard time. And part of what we have to try to think at is just getting out of ourselves. We're being very protective of our space and of ourselves and thinking about like, what's with me? And if we could think about other people, maybe we could encourage other people and help other people get through. It's something we're going to obey Hashem. We'll be okay. When we get past it, we'll be better. Just tell you two more short things about the PSS. Now we're going to continue obey Hashem because we didn't even get to the most famous part of his life is when he was in Warsaw and when he dealt with all of the craziness that was there. Wow. Kaledim Skalman, when he gave Shmuzim, so he spoke and everyone felt like he was talking to them. And it even happened many times that after he finished saying a Shmuz or a Sicha, whatever, a Maimer, so one of the Hasidim would knock on the door and say, Rebbe, I know that you were talking to me. I know you meant me. Because every time he spoke, every person felt like he was talking to them. And I know when I read the Sefer, Chovos Talmidim, and I've learned the Sefer, I can't tell you how many hundreds and hundreds of hours I've spent on the Sefer. I feel like he's talking to me. And when I learn it, I get so inspired. I've learned the Sefer so many times over and over and over again. But every time I feel like he's talking like right to me. I remember the first time I learned the Sefer. I remember who it was. It was a young man named Shmuel Heinemann. Because we were reading the Sefer and it's talking right at him. He said to me, when was the Sefer written? Like, was it yesterday? Because Imamish feels like he's talking to me. And that was the koyach of the Piyasetzna. And that's what this Sefer, Chovos Talmidim, more than any other Sefer. He managed to capture in words a conversation that he has with people. The other Sfarim are very different. The Eish Kodesh is very different. There's tremendous Kabbalistic ideas in his other Sfarim. They're very, very deep, very high Torahs. And the Piyasetzna managed, while he was talking to people, between, like when one person comes to another, he would write Kabbalistic ideas. He would write them down on a piece of paper. That's how fast his mind was. So he had these really deep, very, very lofty ideas, but that's not what Chovos Talmidim was. It's a very simple Sefer, but it talks to the people. And when you read it, you feel like he's talking to you. I feel that way. Last thing. The Rebbe, his focus was on children. Young adults, called children, young adults. He says children, teens are all children. That was his focus, as you know, was just mentioned in the story. And he cared very much about, you know, people who were getting lost. They weren't being addressed. Their needs were not being taken care of. And Mamish was bothering him. And he used to make a lot of noise about it. The Rebbe, if we're going to read in the Psicha, he speaks Shair Faverta. He speaks very, very strongly to big people. He's talking to like the heads of, you know, the communities, and he's giving them a lot of very strong mussar. What's going on? Why ain't anyone taking care of these boys? So someone asked him the following question. They said, Rabbi, why are you making so much noise? And mamash, you it's like almost like you're willing to give up your life for this. Isn't there like a limit? This was his following quote. One of the more famous quotes from the Piyasetz of the Rebbe. The Rebbe said, Rebbe, she'ena muchan, leilech legehenim, kedei lahatzil, Talmud shaloi, a Rebbe that's not willing to go to Gehenna to save his Talmud, may read that shachas, because his Talmud is about to like fall into Gehenna. If he's not ready to go there to pull him out, ain't no Rebbe klala. That's not a Rebbe. So you want to know why I'm getting my feet dirty? You want to know why I'm getting my hands dirty? You want to know why I'm saying things that maybe people don't think are appropriate? I will go anywhere to save my Talmud. That's what the Rebbe said. And that's his legacy, the Sefer. So Beis Hashem, week by week, we're going to try to learn a little bit of the Piyasetz Nerebbe Svarm. By the way, last week was his Yortzeit, the Piyasetz Nerebbe. The Rebbe doesn't have a tzia. The Rebbe, it's not clear exactly where the Rebbe, how he died. According to many, he died in outside of Warsaw. There's an extermination camp. I'm trying to remember what it's called. Maidanek. No, not Maidanek. Not Maidanek. Some people say that Maidanek. No, it's an extermination camp in the forest. There's a difference between a concentration camp and an extermination camp. I hope it'll come to me well. A concentration camp is where they actually had barracks and they kept prisoners. An extermination camp, they brought you there and then they just gassed everyone and there was no place for them to be. They were there for half an hour. Okay. In and out. What? Treblinka. That's it, Treblinka. Treblinka was an extermination camp. They only had a handful of prisoners that stayed. They were there in order to dispose of the bodies. And after a couple of weeks, a couple of months, they were also killed because, you know, they saw too much. And everyone was there. They were under the impression that they were going to be put into barracks, but there were no barracks. They had them in a building. The building was in the shape of like a snake. So that way the people that were in the front couldn't like tell the people in the back because everything was just, it was like a maze. And the people, by the time they got in the building, it was too late. So Treblinka was just an extermination camp. There's nothing there other than, the Germans had to get rid of all of their evidence because they knew that they were gonna lose the war. So they just destroyed the whole camp. So it's not clear if he exactly where the Rebbe passed away, but there's no tzion. The Rebbe has no tzion. The Rebbe has much more than just the tzion. The Rebbe's tzion, he told us what it is. It's his svarim. He told us when he was alive, learn my svarim. And the idea of going to a tzion is the schus of the Rebbe should protect us and should stand in our stead. So the Rebbe says, my tzion is my svarim. Learn my svarim. And I'm confident that the schus of my great-grandfathers, and of course, the Swiss of the Rebbe himself would stand by us. So Bez Hashem, we're going to continue next week. I want to tell you a little bit more about the Rebbe. And by the way, you know, it's a little depressing. There was no one who was more upbeat than the Piyasetz of the Rebbe. He was always in a good mood. As you can imagine, he's in Warsaw and there's like mamish so much to be depressed about. There was one moment where he showed like a weakness. But aside from that, he was strong. He was happy. He was upbeat. He was giving chizik to everyone around him. Even though he was himself, he lost all of those that were dear to him. And still he was always, his emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu was always strong. So we're going to speak about the Rebbe being in Warsaw and all those other things, Beis Hashem, hopefully next week. And then with Siyata Deshmaya, we'll start the Sefer.